888-382-7502 or email thedrive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. It is, I mean, it is a almost a suffocatingly hot day today. The I know the expected heat index was supposed to be around 107 today, and it feels like it.
It's crazy.
If you're out there, I mean, if you just have to walk a short distance outside, you feel it. And I'm just imagine football practice in this. Fortunately, they practiced this morning.
But not tomorrow.
No, tomorrow they're going to practice in the afternoon.
Ouch. We're going to be out there roasting.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering about that. I mean, the viewing window is at 3 o'clock tomorrow. That is like the hottest time of day.
They may have to put the beat writers in those cool-off pools or whatever they got back there.
I'll tell you what they may have to do. What I may have to do is bring a complete change of clothes.
Yeah,
if I'm going to be out there for 20 or 30 minutes, then come do the show, it's going to be like the old days. I had a time when I was working in Montgomery when the air conditioning went out in my little car. Yeah. I didn't have the nicest car in the world anyway, but the air conditioning went out. And let me tell you what, driving to Montgomery and back in the summer, in the spring, and so it was miserable. And I would get up and put on the thinnest T-shirt, a pair of gym shorts, and roll all the windows down and drive as fast as the little car would go. And still, I'd have to stop about two blocks from the station in Montgomery. I'd stop at a gas station, go in, wash up, and change.
Man.
Because it was just, I mean, I'd be soaked by the time I got there. So, yeah, it's probably going to be like that tomorrow. Welcome in, everybody. Yeah, the it's cool and comfortable here in the studio on the Monday edition of The Drive. Glad to have you with us. Bill, that was Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com that you heard. You haven't heard Dan yet because Dan's home waiting to get a situation taken care of. He said fire alarm went off last night when the bottom coil in his oven sparked and smoked. And so no damage, at least. It's a good thing. I mean, you know, you can unplug or, you know, turn off things. But, yeah, so, I mean, so Dan will be checking in as we move on through the show. We'd love to hear from you. Today was a day where, Auburn, as I mentioned, practiced. Auburn football practiced this morning, their fourth practice of the fall. Philip Montgomery came in. And, I mean, no big news or anything from the coordinators. You can tell they've both been head coaches.
Yes.
They don't offer up an awful lot of names. You have to ask the names. I had to come back to Coach Montgomery after I asked about receivers, and he just gave a nice generic answer on how they're all doing well. And it's like, well, at least tell us about the new ones. So we got a little bit there. But, I mean, I think we'd pretty much figured out that, Caleb Burton looks like he may be more of a factor than some people thought. I think a lot of folks thinking, coming off an injured redshirt season, he may not be able to step in there and play as quickly. I don't know about that.
Yeah, from what he said, it sounds like, first of all, Caleb put in a lot of work in the offseason, coming in there, learning the offense, spending time watching tape, acting like a professional, which is always a great sign for a young player when you see a guy like that who also has a talent that a Caleb Burton has. You know that the guys like that, as long as they stay healthy, are going to put together and be really good contributors. And it sounds like he is on his way to being a really good contributor and that he's playing slot and some outside both.
Yeah, because that's what I thought I saw the other day on day two, is like he was working more outside. I mean, you got to just – he's one of those, I think they've got to get him on the field.
Yeah, sounds like it. And sounds like
Auburn's got some other options in the slot.
Yeah, it sounds like Jay Ferris stepped up there. Of course, we know Javarius, the probable starter. You know, we don't want to make an assumption yet, but certainly a returning starter there. And also talked about Jair Shorter and
Shane Hooks.
Yeah, Shane Hooks, too. So
he said the same thing. Jason was talking about this the other day. He said, Shane Hooks has huge hands.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Philip Montgomery said today. He does. You look out there, and he wraps his hand around the football. It looks like you got one of those mini balls.
And I think he mentioned that Shane had a really good practice.
Yesterday.
Maybe it was yesterday. Made some really good catches. So that's a good sign. And we felt like when he was coming in, he was a guy that could be a third down target, right? Or
right.
A guy that you can count on to get open and or to make a play if
yeah, he mentioned coverage. back shoulder catches doing some things like that. So it sounded like Phillip Montgomery's pretty pleased with the way with his receivers, at least here early on.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he talked about all three quarterbacks, and to be honest with you, and you know, this can mean something or it may mean the opposite, but he had probably the most glowing comments on Holden Guerner as the quarterback. Now, that could mean that Holden is doing really, really well and watch out for him in this race, or it could mean that Holden's probably finishing third, but
we don't want him to leave.
I want to talk him up and
right.
You know, right?
We'd love for him to stick around.
Right. So, coaches can do either way.
That's exactly right, Brian. I mean, I was on with Doug over in Montgomery on the midday and was telling him that, and he said we talked about the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You never know if that means, he's a real factor for this, and he's looked good when we've had a chance.
Yes, I don't think he's being dishonest or trying to deceive at all.
But we don't know if he's going to be, you know, when Hugh Freeze does at some point here in the next week or so, decide it's down to two. Don't know if he's a legit candidate to be in there. I wouldn't be shocked.
Oh, I wouldn't be now. I mean, and just listen to the glowing report he had on him, just talking about how well the ball comes out of his hand, just talking about how he spins it and how he's a natural thrower and how hard he's worked on the mental part of the game and knowing the offense and all that stuff. And he even talked about how well he moves, you know? So, I would call him a dark horse candidate. I think that's what I wrote in my story that I did on the quarterbacks today. But I think it's interesting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean – really is, and Coach Freeze had said all three guys are going to get they're going to get equal time. What we saw last week, I'm really looking forward tomorrow, not to the temperature. I'm looking forward to seeing if they've rotated back a little bit, because what we saw the first couple of days was Peyton Thorne and Holden Guerner, you know, out there most of the time with the first offensive line and Robbie out with the second offensive line.
Yeah, and going in, we were told that, and this may be exactly what they're doing, we only see a small smidgen of two practices so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is give those three guys equal reps of the ones, the twos, and the threes. So, and I think they'll.
There's no reason not to, really. I mean, they need to know who is their man, who's the top guy, and who's the backup.
Yep, and I think they'll continue to do that through the scrimmage, would be my guess. I know at Missy Media Days, Free said, I think, 10 days or 10 practices.
Yeah, he said
I think.
10.
I think it was five when we talked to him on day one. So the scrimmage is the eighth practice. So,
I wonder what he would say now, because he said five before they really got started. He said 10, and then it made me think, well, he's got a really pretty good idea who his top two guys are. I wonder if Holden wasn't in those top two, if he might go back to 10
right
now.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, you don't want to eliminate somebody that might be one of your two best guys.
Yeah, you don't.
So anyway, we have the audio from the coordinators. We also have Dan Peck joining us by Skype. Dan, is the building still standing?
Everything is fine. It was a brief emergency last night. No, I have a laborer is coming to do some work here, and he needs to. I need to be here for some of it, so I'm going to do the show remotely today. But yeah, I thought. Really, really my first time getting to spend, getting to hear the coordinators at length. And I thought they were, you can tell they've both, as Philip Marshall pointed out, they've both been in the game for a while.
They've both been head coaches. They know how to answer things without saying too much.
Sure. And you sort of have to ask about a player by name to find out about a player by name. I thought Phillip Montgomery was had some interesting responses. I asked him about, you know, how aggressive the offense plans to be, because I feel like people are always wondering what, especially when there's a coordinator change or a philosophy change at the top, you know, what the pace of play is going to be like, how aggressive do they want to be with their offense, how many plays a game are they shooting for, stuff like that. And it's characteristic of both Hugh Freeze and Phillip Montgomery if this offense is a fast-paced, up-tempo offense, even if that's maybe not as novel as it was in the Baylor and Ole Miss days, it still seems like the kind of stuff that would fit the profile of these coaches.
Yeah, so interesting things today. I mean, again, not a lot of breaking news. I will say this, guys. I thought both of them seem pretty pleased with the way their units are right now.
Yeah, I think Phillip was happy with how things went in the summer and his guys, you know, picking up things and coming in and knowing what to do, including some of the newcomers. I think, was it around 16 or 17 he said he felt like
ready
to go? Yeah,
16 is what Ron Roberts said, 16, yeah.
And wants to get up to 25 guys he can get depend on and felt pretty confident they would get there in the next couple of weeks. You know, and that's just guys that he know he can put out there and play them an SEC game in the rotation or starters. And, you know, I think there's probably some newcomers and young guys that he wants to fit in there, but it's going to take those guys a little bit of time. One guy, Bobby
Travis.
Travis is a guy that I think they think has got some special talents, but he said that he is, A, still getting into shape, right?
Yeah, that's what we figured. Right? I mean, no matter what you think you can do before you come in and see the guys that have been under, you know, the strength and conditioning.
And B, just learning the system.
Right.
And I was – the other thing I've heard that not today, but throughout the last week or so was what a great job the strength staff did.
And hey, we keep hearing that.
It's not coming from the head coach telling me what a great – this is coming from – players and assistants going, I can't believe how much this guy's changed his body. Coach Dom did a great job, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Hadn't just heard that once, have heard that multiple times. So that's what Jamison Travis sort of missed out on this summer. And he's going to have to catch up a little bit. But I think they feel like they got themselves a player in him, a guy that's going to come on as the fall moves on and maybe as the season goes on. And then, boy, if he can, you know, stick around another year and you know, do everything he needs to do on off the field, he could be something special by next year, too.
I'd love to know from Brian, you know, he was there on the practice field, you know, for the viewing windows as well. Is there anyone, you know, you find yourself immediately gravitating to with your eye or your camera? Is there a player that you just find yourself really impressed by, either, you know, you see him in the mix a lot making plays, or you've heard positive things about him all offseason and you really want to see what he looks like?
Well, that player was probably Keldrick Falk in the spring, just looking at how big and how well he moved, and now that he's at defensive end and close to 300 pounds.
He does not look like a true freshman.
But I will say Marcus Harris, I mean, he just looks like a different person to me. He really does. I'm excited to see what he can do because he's always been a guy that's played his tail off for Auburn, makes plays, you know, can get in the backfield, make tackles for loss, and disrupt offenses and create turnovers and jump on a big turnover in a, you know, an SEC game to win it. So I'm excited what he's going to do at defensive end and sliding into tackle when he needs to. And I like that they've got Keldrick Falk there too at D end. I just think that really helps out the depth there on that front. They needed some help there after losing the kid from France. What was his name?
Oh,
that's how quick
Jeffrey
you forget.
Emba.
Yeah,
Emba.
Jeffrey Emba. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just going to say, you know.
Z defensive end.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeffrey Emba.
I was going to say, that's still a pretty, it looks like a pretty good room, the defensive line. I mean, they've gone out and really brought in some guys I think that can help them, including, I mean, obviously Keldrick, but I mean, with Justin Rogers and Lawrence Johnson and Bobby Jamison Travis and Mosiah Nasile Kite.
Yep.
I mean, man, they have really worked to bring in talent and make that room much deeper.
The one thing that's missing, and this is something that Keldrick Falk I think can become and they can eventually get, is they don't have a bunch of first round guys there, maybe like an Alabama or Georgia has.
Mm-hmm.
But that can change, right? And I think Keldrick Falk is that type of player. Maybe Jamison Travis will be that type of player, and maybe someone I'm not thinking of. Maybe a Wookiee Denard or who's the other kid they got from Columbus? Deron Reed.
Reed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe someone like him steps up too. But I like what they've done on the line of scrimmage. I think the offensive line is significantly better, and I don't have any question that the defensive line is better too.
We were talking about it the other day, Brian, and it's easy to forget because he's had sort of a star-crossed career at Auburn. But Zykevious Walker was one of the top-rated players as far as if you look at these guys and what they were out of high school, the whole roster.
Yep.
It's like Kevious Walker is one of the few guys on the team.
He's one of the top five guys rated out of high school, probably on Auburn's roster.
One of the few guys on the team that was a top 100 player coming out of high school on this roster. I don't think there are 10 of them. And Zykevious is one of them. So yeah, maybe he breaks through. Maybe if you're looking down the line, Malik Blockton could profile as that kind of player potentially. We'll see. But that's that's later on. The question of who caught your eye, Bill, is there a player that immediately springs to mind for you after a couple of practices that you're like, wow, that's someone who maybe my opinion of him has changed after just a couple of days. I suspect I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that my opinion's changed that much, but Caleb Burton's been the guy that I can't not see. I mean, he just seems to be gliding past people. It seems much more, I mean, it's just like effortless. All of a sudden he's there and he's catching the ball.
Another member of that top 100 list that we were talking about, another guy that was a top 100 player coming out of high school on this roster. Yeah, I think a couple of the new receivers, maybe it's because of the novelty, because I hadn't seen them before. But, I mean, he's built like a tall running back, right? Like, I mean, that guy is a super impressive-looking athlete in the glimpses we've had of what he can do.
I've got another one, too, when we stop talking about receivers. Go ahead.
Sure, and Shane Hooks, like you said. I'd heard not mixed reviews, but sometimes Nick Mardner was, there were some people that were maybe more pessimistic on how much playing time he could get. And it seems like he's had the ball thrown to him a lot in these practices that we've been able to watch. And I don't know if that necessarily translates to playing time, but I would caution people to forget about him. And he's a tall receiver on this roster. Even with some other guys that are north of 6 feet tall, Nick Mardner still stands out as a particularly tall player on this team. And I guess since we're talking pass catchers, I'll briefly mention Rivaldo and Luke Deal and Brandon Frazier, right? The whole room at tight end, I guess, gets noticed because there's
Tyler Fromm and Micah Ducker. Micah Riley.
A bunch of guys that look like they can play.
Yeah.
Multiple guys, including several upperclassmen. I feel like that's a good problem for Philip Montgomery. How do you deploy a bunch of guys that all seem like they could help you at that position?
So one more for me. In the spring for me, it was Damari Alston at running back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just really, really impressed me, and that's still the case by far. I think he's special. But it only took me watching Jeremiah Cobb a couple of times to know that guy's going to be special.
Yeah, and Philip Montgomery
talked about that, too.
You could tell he was excited about him. Hey, we've got to get to our first break. We'll talk more. We'll also talk about Zykevious Walker's kin, who is will be joining Auburn as well. We'll talk a little recruiting and more. Brian Matthews here. Love for you to join in. Hour number one of The Drive, brought to you as usual by Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And you can call us on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-3390.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Brian Matthews here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Dan is with us on Skype. And let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Yellowhammer gets us started. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Over the last few weeks, we've been hearing all this reports about so-and-so's committed to Auburn. We're making all this headway. We're recruiting all these really good players and so on. And there's a tendency to think that we might do a lot better than the prognostications, which is we'll be 6-6 and 7-5, that kind of thing.
Well, but that doesn't really have anything to do with this year. I mean, you can bring in the best class in the country if they can't play this year.
How much is that later? Do we have any impact this year at all?
Well, the impact this year was made in the off season with the 20-plus transfers they brought in, being able to finish out the 23 class with guys like Kyan Lee and Keldrick Falk and the center.
Connor
Liu, guys they flipped from other schools. They're late. But this recruiting they're doing right now in the high school for the 24 and 25 class is what's going to build Auburn back into a national championship and SEC championship contender. Right, you're starting to lay the foundation right now, taking those steps forward of being able to compete with Alabama's and Georgia's and Clemson's and Ohio State's on a regular basis. They're not there yet, but they're taking those steps.
There's a transfer portal, though. How much is that?
Well, that's what we're talking about. I mean, it's big, but those guys have been here for the most part. Right. There are a few of them that weren't here, but that doesn't. I mean, you don't. At least not yet. There haven't been like as much of a big deal for rankings in the transfer portal as it is in high school and junior college recruiting. But there's no question Auburn was I feel very successful in the transfer portal, bringing talent in. All those guys though weren't, you know, they may not have been rated 4 or 5 stars. Justin Rogers probably the most highly touted guy coming out of high school from the transfer portal.
Okay, well, we're on an upward trajectory.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. Everything Hugh Freeze has done thus far
this is probably
has
the most
been
confident
definitely
about
in the right direction.
Program since 2010-ish, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess I felt great
about
it.
I felt pretty good about it 13, 14, yeah.
Yeah, but the recruiting never matched the success they had.
Right.
They kept waiting for them to take
full advantage of that.
Yeah, it just never happened necessarily.
Well, somehow or other, I think we'll do better than the 7-5. I don't know why. I don't have any real data, but it just feels good.
Yeah, right. You're right about that. Yellhammer, appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. And Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Good. Bill, I wonder if you could tell me if they've handed out suspensions for the guys involved in the brawl that night between the Cleveland and Chicago.
Yes, as a matter of fact, they have, and there are a whole lot of them. Let me see if I can give you the full details. That was wild, wasn't it?
That was pretty wild. Did you hear the call by the Cleveland?
Yes, I did. And down goes Anderson. Yeah. I was like, "All right, Tim Anderson gets 6 games. Jose Ramirez gets 3 games and an undisclosed fine. Well, they both got fined. Emmanuel Clase got a 1-game suspension and an undisclosed fine. White Sox manager Pedro Grifol and Terry Francona of the Guardians each got a 1-game suspension and fined. The Guardians' third base coach got a 1-game suspension and a fine. And Michael Kopech of the White Sox and Gabe Arias of the Guardians each were fined.
I think the MVP of this situation, and by the way, now apparently there's a story coming out that Randall Grichuk and Tim Anderson had a fight shortly before Grichuk was traded. That's made the rounds today. So Tim Anderson having a particular way with some folks around that organization. But I thought the MVP of that situation was the guy who carried Tim Anderson away. Was it Vaughn? Some guy on the White Sox. I'm not totally familiar with him. But the guy who carried Tim Anderson off the field with sort of a bear hug, German suplex type of grip, Heimlich. Because Tim Anderson wanted to keep fighting, but he wasn't totally sure where he was, and certainly didn't need to reignite the situation. I don't know if you've seen what I'm talking about, Bill, but there's a guy that I guess the altercation ends with a guy just carrying.
Oh yeah, I see it. Yeah, did a good job. As a matter of fact, I just saw that video.
He's the hero of the situation because otherwise Tim Anderson would have to worry about a lot more than just a suspension.
Bill, I know Dan and Brian are probably too young. Do you remember some of the fights in the day, like the Eric Davis, Ray Knight, George Brett, Craig Nettles?
Oh, I definitely remember those.
Oh, yeah.
I was not too young for that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, Ray was not one. The Albany, Georgia native. He didn't mind getting into it.
And, Terry, I mean, I have the internet. I know what you're talking about, too. I mean, and, of course, we were just last week, there was a clip of the.
You have the World Wide Web? Really? That's
he
cool.
has
That's
right. the I'm internet. America, we all go to Dan for it.
Yeah.
America Online.
You've got mail.
Just last week, I guess, was the anniversary of Robin Ventura charging the mound on Nolan Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, it's
That's
such
one
a
of the
shame.
More comical.
That was one of the more unwise moves.
Well, no, I mean, because Robin Ventura had a long, prosperous career as a Major League Baseball player and coach. But when you type his name into Google, what do you get?
That's right? What you're going to get.
What do you get? You get he's getting a noogie from one of the best ever. And and looking like a total clown in the process.
Well, Dan, when you Google Bill Buckner, you see the play for the Boston Red Sox in the World Series. But his career was pretty good.
I'll tell you what. If you haven't seen Buckner's episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, he plays a large role in an episode of that show, and he's just fantastic in it. And they play on a lot of the abuse he gets from Boston fans and stuff. But it's he passed away recently, didn't he, Bill?
Really?
Bill Buckner's not with us anymore, I don't believe. But no, that's another. You're right. A guy who a whole career can boil down to one moment. Sort of infamous moment.
Yeah. Take care, guys. Have a good day.
Appreciate the call, Terry. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, and we will talk a little recruiting. We didn't get to it that break, but your calls come first.
Oh yeah.
Here on The Drive.
Part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Brian Matthews here in the studio. Dan checking in from the homestead where he's got some folks coming to fix up a problem that he had yesterday, so he'll be checking in throughout. Brian, we mentioned Zacchaeus Walker a little while ago. Well,
yes.
His brother joining the fold for Auburn, and a little bit of a surprise to some because I think South Carolina thought they had Jahlua Solomon.
Oh, they felt really strong about it, and I think Auburn just didn't give up, and they kept fighting, and I think they made that late push there. What day was this? It was Saturday, right?
Yeah, that was Saturday.
And I think they managed to convince him that Auburn was the best spot for him. And I think he's going to be a terrific player at Auburn. Got to watch him at a camp where he played receiver and defensive back. He is just a tremendous-looking athlete. Already looks like a college player the way he's built. And I think he's going to slot in as a nickel right away and probably be an early contributor. I really like his potential to be a really good college football player.
Man, Auburn is really loading up in the secondary for this upcoming class, aren't they? And that's a good thing because there are a lot of guys that could be gone after this year.
And, we heard about Kyan Lee in the spring, how well he did. And, we talked to Ron Roberts today. He was complimentary of the young freshmen, and I've heard some other good things about them. So I think they feel like they've done a good job recruiting there. And this class is important, too, in reloading. And even though they lost K.J. Bolden, a really talented safety, K.J. went to Florida State, not Georgia.
Right. And that's a school. I mean, I'd had some people telling me for weeks that, look, this is the school this kid has always wanted. That's where he's always wanted to go.
Yep.
And Auburn made a strong, strong push. Yep. There's no question about that because they were nowhere to be seen on his list of top scores. I don't think Auburn was in his top 10, were they?
But no, I don't.
I'm not sure they were, right. But I mean, they came on. But I mean, it's hard to blame somebody for going where they'd always wanted to go.
And this is big boy recruiting, right? Auburn has won some key battles. They flipped Perry Thompson from Alabama. They beat out they flipped DeMarcus Riddick from Georgia, who a lot of people thought would flip right to Alabama, and they won that one. They beat out Alabama for Joseph Phillips, the big edge from Tuskegee. So they just are continuing to win these big, important battles, and sometimes they're going to lose, right?
I mean,
Georgia's won two straight national championships, right? It's not like Auburn's going to go out there and – beat them up on the recruiting trail, right? But if they're competing with them and they're winning some, which they are, that's how you start building up to that level and start getting those type of athletes in your program and start having all those first-round draft picks and 15 guys taking the draft, et cetera, competing for championships like Georgia does. So I think that you, Freeze, and the staff are doing a tremendous job right now with just 15 commitments, and a lot of schools ahead of them have 20 or more. They're 19th in the country.
But
they are third in average star, which tells you once they get that 20 threshold, which the way Rivals does it, and I think a lot of guys
are
going to
jump way up.
Right. They just count the best 20 players in your class. They total that those numbers for those guys, and that's what goes into your rankings. And so once Auburn gets five more commitments, and I think the next two could be just around the corner, they're going to be definitely top 10. Could be top five class overall. We'll see how it finishes up.
Next two guys, maybe linemen?
I think that's really possible. I think DeAndre Carter is very close. The very talented defensive tackle from Los Angeles, California. came on an official visit in June, came back for Big Cat.
He's an offensive tackle, right?
Yeah, yeah, big old offensive tackle. And then T.J. Lindsey, who's a defensive end, D-tackle, versatile there, originally from Arkansas, now at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. I think he officially visited in June, and then his parents came for Big Cat because he couldn't be here due to some obligations with this high school team. So I think those are two guys that Auburn's in good shape for, and they could be making a decision within the next week or two.
Yeah, that they're you know, I can understand a lot of players want to go ahead and do it before their season gets started. And, you know, we've talked about it in the past. I'm still not crazy about the timing of when players can sign.
Yeah, I got to work on that.
I wish they could come up with something that worked a little bit better that wouldn't just have coaches having to be recruiting basically, you know, 11 or 11 and a half months out of the year.
The calendar's a little crazy for them. One other guy I should mention is Caleb Falk, Keldrick's younger brother, a 25 prospect. I think he said August 21st, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right.
I think that's his day. So that's coming up here in two more weeks from today.
That's a Monday. That's 2 weeks from today.
So that's a guy I think, you know, has been to Auburn a bunch of times. He was at Big Cat again. I think, you know, not making promises here, but I kind of like Auburn's chances with him.
Yeah.
And he is a good-looking kid.
So he's a 25, as is Zakevious' younger one.
I don't think I've talked to him or seen him yet or I haven't put two.
It's got a Z in there too, right?
He's a five-star, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's going to be – and, of course, Auburn's already got the kid from Opelika committed. I should know his name. I've talked to him. So I mean, they're Malik Autry. I want to say Malik blocked him for some dumb reason, but Malik Autry is a really talented defensive lineman from Oklahoma, like another kid that's, you know, 6'6", almost 300 or around 300 that can move. So you got to love what they're starting to build already in that 25 class.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's something we haven't seen, and I don't know really, Brian, that we've seen it since the days of Coach Dye, where a head coach was so bought in on recruiting.
Yeah.
We've been out there and watched practice for a couple of days, and Hugh Freeze has been FaceTiming and on the phone while practice is going on.
You got to be relentless because Kirby Smart is relentless. Nick Saban's been relentless in kicking everybody's tails in recruiting for the past 15 years. And there's other coaches out there too, certainly. So that's the only way that Auburn has a chance to beat those kids is if your head coach is really, really personable and works really hard at it, and Hugh Freeze does both. So Auburn is really, really fortunate to have him. He's making a difference. And, you know, you're going to see a better team this fall. But as we move farther along in the Hugh Freeze era, you're going to see Auburn get a lot more talented and be able to compete at a lot higher level. I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the direction of the program right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. 334-321-1390, that's the Kia of Auburn hotline. Love for you to join it. Let's talk a little bit about some of the non-Auburn college news, though.
It is
unbelievable.
Crazy.
Today, the news today, at first I thought, oh, this is just a joke. But then I saw it was Pete Thamel, who I know everybody's not a huge fan of, saying that the ACC is now going to consider Cal and Stanford.
Which to me sounds absolutely nuts.
I thought it was crazy. It's crazy enough when Southern Cal and UCLA went to the Big Ten.
Right.
And then Colorado, Arizona State, Utah heading to the Big 12, Oregon and Washington now going to the Big – the Pac-12 is nothing. It's toast. But the ACC, I guess, trying to stay alive.
But what
– Cal and Stanford?
I don't see how that helps them, A. And, B, it makes everything more expensive
it's
and more
cost,
tough.
It's going to cost them, it seems like.
Right.
Yeah, do they really expect to get a whole lot more money from their rights – for adding those?
No.
Or are they just going to be splitting what they're getting
which is not
two
enough.
More ways right. and adding a ton of travel to it?
Right. They're already making less than the Big 12. And the one thing they have going for them is they're pretty well centralized in that area.
They're
like
at least
the
along the Atlantic side. Yeah. Now the Atlantic Coast Conference is just going to be the Coast Conference?
Yeah, I don't. That's one of the
names of conferences need to change.
But that's what happens when you're starting to panic.
You're grasping. Right. You're trying to stay alive. They're trying to stay alive. The ACC is afraid of being rated next.
Yeah. Well, there's not a dumber decision that any of the top schools in the ACC did when they signed away their granted rights until 2036.
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't have made a stupider decision. I mean, the Big Ten's already making three times as much than they are. The SEC will be very soon. The Big 12 has been pieced together with eight new teams just in the last year and a half. Is making $10 million more than the ACC right now per team,
yeah,
as far as media rights deal.
Yeah, the Big 12. I thought the Big 12 was toast.
Right.
When Texas and Oklahoma left, I thought, right, oh, they're gone. Yeah. The Big 12 is going to be viable.
Yep. Well, they got the right AD, commissioner in, and he was aggressive, and he went out and signed BYU,
UCF, Cincinnati, Louisville.
Yep.
You know,
and then now he's rated and got some decent teams from the. From
left
over the
Pac-12, yeah,
right, and now they're
got the four corners teams.
Now they're a 16-team league. Now they've got in a decent contract, which makes them the third most powerful conference in the country. So now they're in position to stabilize, and if they want to add, or they got some strength behind them now, where the ACC is floundering, and schools are, hey, we're going to spend $120 million plus go to court to get out of the grants of rights just to get the heck out of the ACC.
Yeah. And they still can't get Notre Dame to be a full-time member.
No. The Notre Dame thing is interesting to me because right now their contract with NBC is around $20, $23 million, something like that. The Big Ten, of course, is making $60 million, so almost three times as much. Mm-hmm. But I think their contract is up for 2025, so they are negotiating now. So if they can get, you know, $50 or $60 million or whatever.
40 at least,
no,
or something.
No,
yeah,
need. But if they can't, that disparity – just like Florida State's looking at now, just like mm-hmm. Clemson's looking at now, you can't let another team that's a rival that you want to compete
with. No, you want to compete
make
with. No.
Three times as much money from media rights than you do. That's just not a way to have a winning football program.
334-321-1390. We'll get to the Kia of Auburn hotline before we get to our final break here of hour number one. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. I would think that Cal and Stanford probably already tried to see if there was interest from the Big Ten.
Oh, you know that.
Yeah, they were, of course. Yes.
That's probably the only conference that they would be interested in going into other than the ACC.
You think they'd rather
–
They would go independent, though?
Any conference right now, right?
Both of them, well, they want to be in a conference, but, you know, if they can't get in the Big Ten, they don't want to be in the Big 12 and – they know, even if they wanted to, the SEC doesn't want them, but they wouldn't want to be in the SEC just because they think their academics are so much better. So they picked the ACC because they know the PAC, whatever you want to call it, is, you know, going out of business, and, which ACC might too at some point in time, but at least they got, you know, they've got some schools in it right now. So got to be in one.
Well, it's definitely preferable than trying to go on your own or being in the Big West or
Stanford
and Mountain
Cal
West
got left behind by the Big Ten and Big 12. They would crawl over broken glass naked to get into any of the Big 10, Big 12, SEC or ACC right now. They are in desperate situation. If they were to merge with the Mountain West, okay, the Pac-12, the best deal they could get from Apple was around $20 million per team per year, right?
Yep.
The Mountain West only pays out $4 million per team. You want to talk about what that would do to an athletic?
They'd have to cut half of their
right,
programs.
Department, right, right. The budget for them. I mean, it would just destroy their athletic program.
I am increasingly. Hi, everybody. Hey, how you doing? By the way, I'm increasingly uncomfortable about the role that the broadcast networks play in deciding what these conferences look like, though, because I worry some of the trends I look at. I worry what could happen in the next decade if one of these providers says, hey, you know what? We can't pay our bill to this conference. We can't pay our, like, I mean, it's just not profitable for us to. And the professional leagues have to worry about this, too, right? The NFL's got, you know, however many billion dollars due to them every year in broadcast contracts. And I just think the way, especially with the way cable viewership, to cable subscription trends are going, it's just that's
why ESPN is going to go to just basically streaming, right?
I mean, it makes sense now,
yeah.
but there could be a day where the economic model doesn't make sense anymore, and I wonder what happens to the conferences then.
We just get charged a lot more money is what happens to us, the end user.
For for example, Duke wouldn't want to come to the SEC. I mean, yeah, money-wise they would, but Duke thinks they're too good academically to be in the SEC.
Listen, this has nothing to do with academics anymore. If it did, Stanford and Cal would have a home. This is all about your football team.
I can assure you that Stanford would not join the SEC.
They would 100% join the SEC if that was offered to them, which it wouldn't be. They would 100% do it.
And the SEC is too far down the rung.
I don't think we're going to have the opportunity to find out.
They would be turning down, they being Stanford in this situation, in a hypothetical situation where the SEC offered them like a full media share, you know, to join. It would be a lot of money to turn down. Now, they're a unique situation because they're a private school with some unbelievably wealthy alumni, and they have prioritized other sports over football and men's basketball, which is something most athletic departments don't do around the country. So it's a unique situation. I don't think we'll ever have to explore what Stanford will do. But no, I think that places, his point about Duke, places that view themselves as national championship caliber in football or men's basketball, in the ACC especially, but I'd say those Pac-12 programs too, whichever ones you wanted to name, they cannot survive with rivals that are just destroying them in media revenue. Like, you cannot – the Clemson and Florida State
– athletically, they can't. Yeah. I mean, the university can survive.
Oh, sure. But what I'm saying is that the athletic departments and the status quo for those programs is not sustainable. And, you know, we were sort of joking about it last week. You know, if the solution from UNC to the football programs and the conference is, you don't need as much money as the SEC schools to compete. Like, that's not going to work. For those schools, and it's probably going to break that league apart too.
Hey, Brett, we've got to get to our final break of hour number one. Appreciate the call. Great stuff. We will be right back. Dan's here in the studio now.
Everybody.
The gang's all here as we continue on the Monday Drive.
Inspired by the bold bison, Southern Union student.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Just about out of time here in hour number one. Dan joining us here in the studio. Got everything taken care of at the house?
Everything is fixed. It was a quick fix, but
that's good.
Fairly dramatic situation.
Well, when something's smoking in your house that you're not planning on cooking.
Yeah,
that's a concern.
Something that was
electrical
not,
smoke.
When something is on fire that's not supposed to be on fire. Generally, mm-hmm. It's like okay, I will say. Concerning to very concerning, depending on what, of course, that item is.
Yeah, we can get into this more because it is just crazy looking at what's going on with the realignment. It feels like misalignment in college sports, but I understand why it's going on, but I'm still trying to figure how viable some of these moves are going to be.
Do you want to let people hear some Philly gun in hour two? Philip Montgomery, the Auburn.
Sure, we can do that. We've got that. And Ron Roberts, we'd love to hear from you as we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive.
1390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Got the full studio now. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Drew at the controls. Yeah, welcome in on this. I said it's sort of smotheringly hot.
Oppressive.
It is. It really is oppressive. It really is. And, I mean, the heat indices are well into triple digits. So be careful if you have to be out. And, boy, Hope your AC is working.
And brace for a 2:30 opening day as well, right?
And that has to be why Auburn is practicing tomorrow afternoon in this stuff.
Well, I think there's probably some benefit to it beyond just that first game, but I know what you mean. Like you want the players conditioned for what they could, and you know what? There's a chance. We were talking about it last week, Brian. There's a doubleheader, the September 30th,
mm-hmm.
with the ESPN has the scheduling option that day of someone in the SEC is going to kick off at 8:15 Central Time.
Okay.
So someone in the conference. It could be Auburn and Georgia potentially. Although
I think it's earlier than
that's
that.
That's more likely. But that's sort of my point is that Auburn Georgia could be a September 30th 2:30 game on CBS, and I think things will cool off a little bit by September 30th.
Not a whole lot,
but if
not
you're,
usually.
But I'll tell you what, if you could be playing Georgia at 2:30 in a couple of weeks after opening,
that will be a different kind of feel. Georgia has been generally cold weather.
Yeah.
You know, now we've got it early in the season. That 2:30 start could be really, really hot.
Potentially. We were talking about, like, that's the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I expect, and by the way, if Georgia, they'll be favored in their first four. Is it the fifth game of the season? Is Auburn,
yeah.
Georgia? So
Georgia be favored in all their games.
So I think the win streak.
Until they lose a couple.
The win streak at Georgia, if they win the first four before they play Auburn, I believe the win streak will be at 20 for Georgia and. And yeah, that'll be a.
Auburn would settle for a nearly 30-year-old swap. Georgia snapped that Auburn 20-game win streak. I don't think you're going to get a tie now. What would it take to have? What would it take to end the regular season game in a tie now?
Oh,
you'd have to have like some kind of
force majeure, right?
Yeah,
I feel like maybe it. I mean,
they played so many overtimes and they kept matching. Twos and zeros.
I mean, if you have a situation where a game is called for an emergency and then
we ran out of players,
never made up. It's I guess maybe in that case the game would just not reflect in the standings at all, rather than come down as a tie. But no, now with the wacky overtime, I think they'll play.
I think regular season games ought to be able to end in a tie. I don't have a problem with regular season games ending in a tie.
Do you want? Like so you'd be okay with just no overtime at all when you call it a tie at the end of four?
Yeah, I don't have All right, you could do limited numbers. Say, okay, we're going to have a max three overtimes. If after that it's tied, it's a tie.
You know, Mike.
Because it's a regular season. I mean, you can use the old tie breakers. It's a halfway, half loss.
I still like the old overtime rules, by the way. I still don't like the new
ones. So I was going to say, if it were up to you, college football overtime would end how, Brian? What would be the college football overtime?
I would have kept it the way it was, even if it does mean seven overtimes or whatever. You know, we saw happen with Arkansas.
Well, they're concerned about injury now.
I know,
and that's the reason. That's why I'd say put a limit on it. You know, just do it. We've got we'll go three overtimes, and if it's tied, it's a tie.
You know my stance on this, Bill. And I don't know if any organized football has ever attempted this, but I think the overtime rule should be similar to the old college football format with the alternating. I think it's first and goal at the 10. No field goals. You got four shots at the end zone, and if you can do it, then you score a touchdown. I guess you can choose what you want to do after the touchdown. Maybe there's no extra points or anything like that, and it's just first and goal at the 10, and you trade off first and goal at the 10s until someone
that's
blitz.
Sort of that's a high school. High schools have done that.
Do they do that?
Okay. Some do.
I like the idea of just, I mean, it's college football, but moving that in.
But you know, the thing that bothers me about those things is then you start going, oh, you get into one of those games, and all of a sudden, a team that is not very good offensively or very good defensively ends up in a 63-56 game, and it jacks the stats way up, and all of a sudden, whoa, this is a really good offensive team. No, maybe not. They just had a really good overtime plan.
What if we called them two-point conversions instead of touchdowns? What if it was trading off two-pointers at for first and goal at the 10 to score 2 points instead of six? So it doesn't ruin the stats.
Just do a point then.
Yeah, that works for me.
I don't know.
No, because I think that's a good point. Like, I mean, these 73-point games where...
Right, and it's like, what a great offense. Like, not really. They're scoring from the whatever, you know. It's from the three-yard line.
It's not the same as scoring that much in regulation.
Right. 334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. Hour number two of the drive just getting underway, and it's brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Let's get to the Kia hotline, and Jeremy is up first. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. Has, haven't we gone to a trading two-point conversion plays after so many overtimes in
yes.
college football now?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
They're trading, but you know what? I feel like the rhythm of just having offenses take turns running one play, like I that to me puts defense, I don't know, like that feels...
I don't know. Look, if two teams have played that long, end the game at a tie.
Yeah.
And that's where I think problem. if you cap the game at two or three overtimes, with the way that it's set up, getting the ball as close as they are, you're going to end up more often than not with a team being forced to make a decision whether or not to go for two and win the game or kick the extra point. And
yep.
I just say, cap the game at three overtimes, and it's on your coach whether you win or tie this game. Yep. Win, lose, or tie. Yep. It's on your coach's decision.
Yeah, I like it. It's sort of like the decision making. It adds to that.
My question would then become: What about the games in college football that need a winner? You play till there's a winner. In those
what do you mean? You mean in the postseason?
I mean, yeah. I would say you've got sure. games in college yeah. football now.
That's got to be different in the postseason.
They can't end in ties. Yeah. But I mean, yeah. I think that's a. I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to regular season ties in college football, but I'm still sort of curious as to. You know, how you settle it in these situations where, this game can't end in a tie.
If the NFL can have games that end in a tie right now, college football can have games that end in a tie. Yep. And that's just where I am with it. I heard or read something yesterday about all this college football alignment. And what they were talking about was eventually these conferences are going to get so big that they're going to split into pods and pools, and you're going to end up back in the same spot that you are. They're just all going to be in different names. Because, I mean, you look at it now, basically the SEC is the old Southwest Conference / Big 8 and the original SEC teams. And eventually they're going to split back up into those little groups again.
See, I wonder if it's going to get regional again or if the more likely split, and I posited this to Bill the other day, you know, if this thing starts to get really cutthroat with the rights, Jeremy, what happens when the biggest fish in conference start saying, "Well, why are we splitting the media rights equally with them when they're not investing when they're not investing in football and men's basketball the way we do? Why if I could foresee a future where an Alabama or a Georgia says, "Why am I getting an equal rights share as Mississippi State? Why are we splitting it equally with Vanderbilt? Why are we splitting it?"
That's where you're going to get into just how many teams do they end up bringing in on this venture. I've said for a long time, like, God bless UAB and Troy. They have no business being in the same division as Auburn and Alabama. They do not belong there.
Oh, I'm pro Group of Five playoff in part because I think it's fiction to pretend that everyone in the bowl subdivision is playing for the same national championship when the season starts.
Yes.
And like, I don't think it would delegitimize the actual college football playoff at all if you took the four best Group of Five teams and let them play in Las Vegas or something for a championship. Like, I think it would actually give those teams in leagues like the Sun Belt an actual national championship they can win.
Well,
so, yeah, I think... Yeah.
The thing is, you basically send them back where they belong, which is to 1AA football. Like, that's where they belong this whole time. They've made the jump up to Division I, bowl subdivision, whatever you want to call it, strictly for the money aspect of it, knowing they have absolutely no ideas that they'll ever compete. UNA is the perfect example. That is a historically strong Division II school that has no business. They have no business trying to play Division I football.
I mean,
Division I athletics in general.
Yeah, well, Division I athletics I would disagree with because there are so many Division I basketball programs and those teams can pop out of nowhere, and I got no problem with
Division I football, though.
Yeah, no, Division I football is a different animal completely. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say that, you know, playing, there are a shocking number of Division I men's and women's basketball programs, and some of them you find out about because you look up and they're in the Sweet 16. But like,
sure,
football's a different thing.
My final little rant of the day is everybody wants to, you know, point and make fun of the NCAA for not having any teeth or not having a president that's very strong. What's happening right now in college football is exactly why these college athletic directors and college presidents have never allowed it to be strong. they want to be able to make these decisions and not have some higher-up organization telling them what to do when it comes to this kind of stuff.
No, great. I mean, great stuff, Jeremy. And I think the future is, I mean, there's exciting stuff on the horizon for college athletics, but I think there's also people seemingly getting tossed overboard every year and every time we realign.
Will there ever be a point where, oh, there's just going to be more money? Let's keep adding more teams. There's more money. I don't know that that's going to be the case. That's what I was thinking when we were talking about the ACC, Dan. How do the other schools in the ACC feel about adding two more teams and just splitting the pot up two more ways?
I mean, well,
that doesn't make any sense.
Florida State's saying that the current split doesn't
work
for them.
So let's give you even less add two West Coast teams.
No, if the ACC's adding, the ACC's going to be adding to replace the football teams that leave. Like, if the ACC's adding programs, it's because Florida State and Clemson and Miami and Virginia Tech and Louisville decided that the current situation doesn't work for them and they need to go find a place that'll pay them more for the rights to their football games. What do you think, and I like Brian's thoughts too, could you foresee a scenario where bigger athletic departments within a conference start to do what, I mean, Florida State's doing it because they're unhappy with the current split, but could you foresee a scenario, especially if money gets tight down the road, where the bigger conference, the bigger athletic departments are saying, well, why is the split even between us and places that don't prioritize football and men's basketball the way we do?
A lot of it depends on the strength of your commissioner. I think the SEC with Greg Sankey has someone that can keep people understanding the big picture and where they are. Now, I think unless things got tight and all of a sudden that deal went, oh, you're not getting $90 million, you're going to get $30 million each, then you might see some of the teams going, wait a minute, we deserve more than that.
And then I guess the logical question would be, is there someone looking to construct a Super League where you take the biggest fish from all of these conferences? And
I think there's always someone looking to do that.
Is that where this could end up, is the possibility?
I'm sure not going to say no with the way things have gone. I never would have foreseeing what we're seeing right now.
I think we're headed to three or four super conferences. And it looks to me more like three, to be honest with you, of around 20 teams apiece.
Well, right now the ACC is trying to stay viable. The Big 12 looks like, viable. Hey, they've saved themselves for the time being. Right.
But if the ACC implodes, you figure the SEC would take two or four of their teams. Maybe the Big 10 jumps on a couple, and the Big 12 takes who they want, and there we have three super.
It works better with four. It works better. The numbers work better with four than it does three.
Could you see the SEC or the Big 10 kicking out current members because money? Like that would be, I think, the concern of, you know, if things start to get – if things shift in the wrong direction – like, are places that think they're secure right now in the SEC or the Big Ten, are they going to be looked at and say, well, what are they bringing to the table really and truly as an individual brand? Like, would the conference lose anything if they weren't around anymore? And I think if they start asking those kind of questions, you know, this thing could shift even more.
Let's get one more call before our first break this hour, and Jay is up next. Hey, Jay, thanks for hanging on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Jay.
There's three things. Great show. There's three things I want to make in regards to football. One, I just don't like Auburn playing Georgia, and I'm an Auburn fan. I don't like Auburn playing Georgia this early in the season. I'm old-fashioned. I'm used to them playing late in the season. In fact, I recall Georgia, the last big money game, either Auburn, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, would alternate home and away. And I think they should go back to that. To where in Georgia, if they're playing Georgia at home, they should play Auburn away. And then if they play Auburn at home the other year, they should play Georgia. I'm all for that. Because if you look at the current schedule, I think Auburn's playing some head-knocking team late in the season. They should have just kept Georgia at that same place. If you're going to play another head-knock.
Well, the thing is, if you're going to have to play, and under the current schedule, if you're going to have to play them both either home or away, you want them split up. So that's better than having to play both of them on the road back-to-back. What Auburn would have to do is repay Georgia for when they made the schedule shift back in, what was it, 2012, by having to play back-to-back years in Athens.
Right.
And I don't see any terrible problem with having to do that when you're going to have to redo the whole conference schedule anyway.
Listen, I kind of like it because I like having your big game sort of spread out a little bit. You know, you look at Oklahoma, Texas, the Red River Rivalry is usually in
mid-season.
Yep. And I think for Auburn to have two big rivals and one of them being mid-season-ish and the other one being at the end of the season, I think that's a great fit to me. And it also, it gives you that earlier in the season test.
Oh, yeah.
And teams, like you can look at 2013 Auburn and other teams that get better as the season go on, that march toward that championship, can really take an early game like that if they lose or win, but if they lose especially, and really build on it and maybe find out what they need to do and become a much better team going forward. So I kind of like the way it's set up. Now, I know it's not traditional, right? It's not Amen Corn anymore, which we love to listen to Pat Dyckhoff through back in the day, but you know, I'm for, and this is one of them.
The other piece that I'm going to bring up is Jeremy's call about the other teams such as UABs and Troy's. I'm a Troy graduate. That's where I'm grad school. I hate to say this, but he's a clown. No program that's D1 like Troy that has ascended, and like UAB that has ascended, should ever go back to 1AA unless they have to. They've gained too much ground to ever go back to 1AA. I think what he said is crazy. Now, I do believe in this. I believe in the Group of Five championship.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be crazy to think that Troy is at the same level of athleticism. I mean, not in terms of body for body, but in terms of budgets and programs, size and fan base, should be at the same level as an Alabama or Georgia. Georgia Tech on off, but they should at least have their own national championship in Mountain West. And,
I'd love a group of I'm opposed to, unless the economics of college football create, you know, a tiered system where we have a super conference, and that's, you know, like I'm opposed to sort of, you know, moving anybody back down who doesn't voluntarily want to go out of the bowl subdivision. But I also, I've been beating the drum for a Group of Five championship, even with an expanded playoff. Like, I'd still like to see, you know, 4 or 8 Group of Five teams selected to
play
for it. Yeah, I'd watch it more than most of the bowls.
Here's a interesting point to think about, okay? First of all, I love your idea of having a Group of Five playoff. I think that would be tremendous, and they should do it. Whatever it may be, a group of six now. I don't even know. I ain't looked at that yet.
Yeah.
Group of everyone but the SEC. And
that's
the
right. Group of everyone except the ones that are still standing.
Yeah, Florida State will be there pretty soon.
You want to talk about the four biggest winners in this round, in this latest round of, you know, the conference realignment and everything. BYU, somewhat, but especially Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, all teams that were a group of five, probably in a similar situation to Troy and UAB and some of these other schools. Those schools are now part of the Big 12, which is now
the third best conference.
Right, and they're making $32 million per year in media rights. Right? Not too long ago, they were in small Group of Five teams. So why shouldn't Troy and UAB, et cetera, still try to achieve what they can and maybe NCAA throw them a bone and let them have their own playoffs so they can have some, you know, championships and those type of things too?
Great stuff, Jay. Appreciate
the call. Appreciate the call, Jay. Don't be a stranger. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Right back with more of your phone calls. Spectre, you're up first when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, y'all. Listen up. This is Lee County Sheriff Jay Jones with a scoop.
On ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Mostly. Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. From AuburnSports.com. Brian, talk a little bit about all the things going on. It is it's a fun time. I mean, with football practice, recruiting. Hey, we're school's about to start. I mean,
yeah. And we were just talking about my musings, which is my Monday column. But the most interesting thing, and Bill, you read it, right?
Yeah.
So you already know the answer. Do you know who wrote Crazy by
Patsy Cline?
By Patsy Cline, the famous song, Dan, Crazy?
I don't know who wrote it.
Willie Nelson.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Willie was more a writer back in the day because, I mean, you know, he doesn't have the normal... record voice.
I always get now. This is something I shouldn't confess on the air. I always get Loretta Lynn and Patsy Cline confused.
Oh no!
Now which one was the coal miner's daughter?
That was Loretta.
Loretta.
Okay. And Patsy Cline has just the sweetest, smoothest voice.
Mm-hmm. Patsy Cline is
Sweet Dreams.
She's a character in Coal Miner's Daughter.
Yes, she is.
Beverly D'Angelo. Plays Patsy Cline, and she's great in Coal Miner's Daughter. But then. Sometimes, yeah, when I hear them, I struggle to. I was like, is that a Patsy or a Loretta Lynn song?
Did you know that ahead of time that he wrote that song? I had no idea. No clue.
That's the old DJ.
Of course. You got to know those little tidbits, right?
You read albums or the liners.
It's a 43-year-old movie. I just looked it up. But would you recommend Coal Miner's Daughter to somebody who's enjoying this conversation and hasn't seen it?
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you never seen Coal Miner's Daughter before?
Yeah, that's a great story.
And you know what? The actors do their singing, right? In that one, a lot of the actors are doing their own singing.
I believe so.
And that's I always appreciate that versus the sort of lip sync. Right.
But lots of coverage of fall camp, of course. Lots of coverage of recruiting, everything happening there. And we'll get together tomorrow. We're hoping to between player interviews at noon.
It'll be a late lunch.
And going out there at 3 for our little media viewing of practice, doing a podcast tomorrow. So we'll see if that can work out.
Sounds great, Brian. Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. Is Jack still hanging on? Is he hung on through all this nonsense?
Hey, Jack.
Hey, Jack. How you doing, man? I don't know. Maybe he didn't hang on.
Is that Jack or is that the other one?
Yes. Hello.
Hello, hey. Jack.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Man, I didn't know if you'd stick around. I didn't figure we went way off track there.
No, that's all right. Hey, I was just, I had to get you guys on the line. Heard Bill right when we came on, I think it was at the top of this hour, heard you guys talking about ties in college football, and I don't know if you guys have seen Ted Lasso yet, but I think that is cause for the apocalypse in the American way, if you want to say it from the Brits. But man, I don't know. I don't know about ties in college football. I think I'd have to divert on that one.
Well, I mean, regular season. I mean, if you're really concerned about safety and the players not playing too long and things like that, I say give them a shot. That's why I said two or three. Give them three overtimes. Give them that opportunity. Don't get me wrong. I love those Arkansas 56-49 seven overtime games. I wasn't crazy about the Auburn-Georgia 56-49.
Yeah, because Auburn couldn't tackle them.
I know.
They kept running that.
But if you really are concerned about safety of the players, it's regular season. Canada's a half a win and a half a loss. It still works out, but obviously in the postseason you'd have to play till somebody wins.
Sure, and I think that's what college baseball does a little bit of now. You know, if you have an emergency, I think like Dan, like you were saying, if you got some sort of emergency that goes on, you can kind of fix it with, okay, well, it's going to count as half a game as a win, half a game a loss. And in the end, that's kind of a tiebreaker. But, man, I don't know. I've never – it's hard for me just because, I didn't really grow up with ties. And so when I saw that in the NFL, I remember for the first time, I thought that was a big deal. And so, don't know. Never been a big fan of ties, but hopefully they stay away from it. So, appreciate it, guys.
Man, it's good hearing from you, Jack. Yeah.
I can still remember the Syracuse coach at the time.
Oh, yeah, losing his mind.
Remember that? What was his name? Do you remember him?
Syracuse coach?
That was that 83? Or was that later?
No, that was the second. That was the 87 or whatever. Okay. Yeah, because remember,
I was a student then. Okay.
83 was the Sugar Bowl against Michigan.
They won that game 10-7, maybe something like that.
9-7.
9-7. Okay.
On three Del Greco field goals, but the tie. Well, I mean, the thing is, it was not a chip shot, and it would have been fourth and a long. And it's, I mean, why go for it there?
Right.
If you had a championship, I mean, if the national championship was on the line, you go for it. It's like, we're not gonna finish the season with a loss. But I mean, that's the kind of thing it creates. It creates that furor. Why didn't you go for it from the team that feels like because we had a better shot of stopping you if you'd gone for it than kicking the field goal? We'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind? sports-wise. We'll get to our bottom-of-the-hour break. A half an hour to go here on the Monday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so of the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls, and yeah, anything that you want to talk about. We never ran any of the audio. You want to run a little bit of Philip Montgomery?
Yeah, you got Philip Montgomery.